Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it as we roll on. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Matt Pauley with you, taking you till 8 o'clock this hour. We've got a jam-packed hour. Jay Jaffe is going to join us in 10, 15 minutes. We'll get his thoughts on the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame ballot that came out yesterday and who he thinks is going to get in. I think there's three names that I feel very comfortable are likely to get in. And beyond that, who might we see get in this year and who might have a path to eventually getting in as well. I keep going back to the path that Scott Rolen took, where he barely had enough votes to even stay on the ballot. And eventually, year after year, it continues to grow and he eventually gets in. And I by the way, I think that's a credit to the voters. Like it's really easy to take shots at the baseball writers and the voters. And sometimes they're very deserving of those shots that we take. But I think when you see a guy steadily get more and more votes, I do think that the voters are considering other things and listening to the arguments and things like that. And there is value in that. I've always believed, you don't host a sports show like this without really believing in the things that you say. And that's what I do. I'm a big believer of you have to defend the words that come out of your mouth. But at the same time, I think sometimes people in this industry don't leave open the possibility for being wrong and don't leave open the possibility for taking in other information and adjusting their take on something. And that's I always try not to be that way. As strongly as I might believe in something, I always try to have a very open mind about things and listen to what other people say and be willing to change my opinion on it. I know I don't get everything right. So I think it's a credit to baseball writers when there is somebody who starts off with not so many votes and slowly but surely makes their way in. So who of the new entrants might be on that list? And we'll talk with Jay Jaffe about that. And then later on this hour, it's our weekly conversation with Patrick Mahomes that we get courtesy of our sister station in Kansas City, 96.5 The Fan. So the Chiefs quarterback will be on coming up in just a little while. New college football playoff rankings just being released within the last 15, 20 minutes or so. In previous years, nothing of consequence would have happened because there was no changes in the top five spots. Now that changes a little bit because now with the expanded playoff, what happens down below ends up mattering. So the top five spots are still Oregon, Ohio State, Texas, Penn State, Indiana. Tom Ackerman's Indiana Hoosiers are in that five spot. Notre Dame has moved up two spots to number six. Alabama moves up three spots to number seven. Miami back up one spot to number eight. Ole Miss up two spots to number nine. Georgia up two spots to number 10. Tennessee drops four spots to number 11. Boise State goes up one spot to number 12. That is notable, by the way. That's really notable that Boise State is in the 12 spot. Then you have SMU at 13 and BYU. They drop eight spots. This is what happens when you lose to Kansas. They drop eight spots and they go all the way to number 14. The reason Boise being at number 12 is notable for all this is because with Boise State being ahead of BYU, you have a group of five leader ahead of one of the Power Four conference leaders. So the top ranked Big 12 team is BYU, but Boise State is in front of BYU. So that puts the Broncos in position to get a first round bye. I wasn't planning on talking about it, but I'm going to. This is the one issue I take with the college football playoff rankings. If the regular season ended right now, number 12 Boise State would get a first round bye. That's dumb. That's really dumb. And I get the idea that you want to award conference champions, that there needs to be a carrot out there, that if you win a conference championship, you get something extra beyond just being seeded. I don't like it. Like that would be the equivalent. I mean, this is not an apples to apples, but that would be the equivalent of some of these low-level conference champions in college basketball getting seeded higher than a really good power conference second-place team or a really good power conference third-place team. Like that's just silly. It doesn't make sense. So if you win a conference championship in college basketball, you get into the big dance, but your seeding is not guaranteed. And if you come from a not very good conference, there's a pretty good chance that you're going to be a 15 seed or a 16 seed, something like that. It bothers me that they've got this set up where basically the rules are the four conference champions get a first round bye. However, if one of the group of five conference champions has a higher ranking in the college football playoff rankings than one of the power conference champions, well, then that team gets the first round bye instead. That's just, it's dumb. Like, I would have no problem saying that, because right now BYU isn't even in the top 12. So I don't have a problem if the Big 12 is guaranteed a spot into the college football playoff. That if BYU or Utah or Kansas State or whoever ends up playing Colorado, whoever ends up winning the Big 12 championship this year, I have no Iowa State is still probably in the running in that as well. I have no problem with no matter who wins the conference championship game, getting an automatic entry into the college football playoff. That makes all the sense in the world to me. You win your conference championship game, you get in. But to give the first round bye and then to have this situation where a Boise State at number 12 would be in line for a first round bye, and this type of situation won't happen very often. More often than not, the champion, the top-ranked team from the SEC, from the Big Ten, from the ACC and Big 12, you would think more often than not those programs are maybe not all top four where you would think that they get the first round bye, but all top seven, top eight, top nine type teams. But it's not like that right now, and it puts them in a weird situation. Locally, Missouri and Illinois each stay in, or Missouri stays in, Illinois back in. Missouri is at number 23. That's where they were at last week. That's notable because they fell out of both the AP poll and the coaches poll. And then Illinois, they move back in at 7-3. They come in at number 25 after they were dominant against Michigan State this past weekend. We didn't talk a lot about the Illinois-Michigan State game. There was so much focus on the Mizzou game and what happened against South Carolina. We haven't spent much time talking about what Illinois did this past weekend. That was a really good win for them. And I don't know if it's a statement win, but it's certainly a notable win for them. So that's kind of the idea of what's going on right now with the college football playoff rankings, which are just released. Jay Jaffe joins us in just a moment. We'll get his thoughts on the Baseball Hall of Fame ballot that was released yesterday. We'll do that next here on KMOX. Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX, your home for the Cardinals. Yesterday, the Major League Baseball, not Major League Baseball, but the Baseball Hall of Fame ballot came out, being released by the Baseball Hall of Fame, as a lot of new names are on there, some holdovers as well. There's nobody in the world better to talk about that with than a guy who wrote the Cooperstown Casebook, and he is the creator of JAWS, which is a way that you can evaluate players. He is our friend Jay Jaffe, senior writer at Fangraphs. Follow him on Twitter at J_JAFFE. Jay, always appreciate you taking some time with us today. How are you?
Hey, thanks. Good to be back.
So you look at the names that are on this list. Am I correct in saying that Ichiro Suzuki, CC Sabathia are pretty much for sure first ballot Hall of Famers, and in all likelihood we'll see a guy who got very close last year in Billy Wagner. Those three, is it a safe bet that those three are probably going to get in this time?
I think probably short of a safe bet on CC. I think CC Sabathia is going to be a Hall of Famer someday, and someday in the next few years. I don't think it's going to be an automatic first ballot entry. I think he could get in, but I think it's more likely he builds toward a year two or year three entry. I think he's going to take a little bit of convincing from some people, but I'll be pleasantly surprised if I'm wrong and he does get in. I'm certainly in favor of it.
Is the pushback on CC just there's many voters out there that are more restrictive on their first-year ballots?
I think that's part of it. I think also maybe there's some, unfortunately we've seen as the way the role of the starting pitcher has changed over the last 50 years, really. We've seen declines in workload. We've seen, higher ERAs, especially from the era that Sabathia played. I mean, his career ERA is 3.74, which would be one of the highest in the Hall of Fame. But it takes some interpretation. You have to, you could put that in perspective by understanding, the high-scoring ballparks he was in, like Yankee Stadium and things like that. It just takes a little bit more finesse to make his case because, he didn't win 300 games. He's only 251 games. He did strike out 3,000 batters, only the third lefty to do that. Has won Cy Young, has won World Series ring, good postseason resume. But, his last few years were a bit of a grind. And sometimes I think it's a little hard to overcome that that recent memory as well. But I'm optimistic in the long run. I just don't think it's going to be as easy as Ichiro, who I expect to be, getting almost unanimous, if not completely unanimous support.
In terms of Billy Wagner, he got so close last year. What happens when somebody gets that close? What kind of conversations happen in the 10, 11 months between the announcement and when the next voting takes place, where there's going to be obviously a lot of voters who do put Wagner probably on their ballot this time?
Yeah, I think that, I think there are, there's certainly a segment of voters likes to be the one that finally kind of close ranks around a guy and say, yeah, I helped get him in, I'm the gatekeeper here. I'm once I approve, he's a Hall of Famer. But there's also, new voters coming into this who are maybe a little bit more attuned to, being for a given candidate than the voters they're replacing who've aged out of the electorate. There's people who maybe didn't have him on their ballots for space reasons the last couple of years. Just, I think there are any one of a number of reasons. It's a body of almost 400 voters, and they all have their individual reasons for how do they come to their decisions. Wagner wasn't a slam dunk. At one point, he was only getting about 10% or so of the support. So this has really been a long, slow build. But there is some urgency to his candidacy now because he's in his final year. And he fell just 5 votes short last year. There was one very conspicuous drop from the ballot by a guy who wrote a whole column about it, then a whole column about why he was being bullied on social media for making the choice. There's all kinds of weird stuff happens here, but I do think he'll get in. And I think there are people looking at his credentials. And, as we watch the next generation of potential Hall of Fame closers, guys like Craig Kimbrell and Kenley Jansen and Aroldis Chapman scuffle in their mid-30s and maybe look like they're not going to make it. I think we can appreciate a little bit more just how close Billy Wagner is and how worthy he is of election.
Other holdovers include Alex Rodriguez, Manny Ramirez, Andrew Jones, Carlos Beltran, Chase Utley, Omar Vizquel, Jimmy Rollins, Bobby Abreu, Andy Pettit, Mark Burley, Francisco Rodriguez, Torrey Hunter, David Wright. Look, some of those guys obviously have some other things going on. Some of those guys are connected to PD. Some of those guys are connected to other things like Carlos Beltran. Is there anybody on that list that to you clearly is going to get kind of on that track? You mentioned a Wagner starting with 10% of the votes here in St. Louis. We know about the path that Scott Rolen took. Any of those holdovers, do you feel like still has that path to get in?
Yeah, I think Utley is a guy I look at as having kind of the Scott Rolen path. I mean, modest early support. Utley, as I pointed out in my Fangraphs chat today, Utley actually debuted with 28.8% of the vote. That's much higher than Rolen or Larry Walker, a little bit higher than Tim Raines, a little bit higher than Mike Messina. And I'm sure I'm forgetting one or two of these guys, but we've seen a whole bunch of candidates in recent years rally back from getting these low shares to gain entry, usually late in their candidacy, sometimes even in their final year, like Raines and Walker and Edgar Martinez, who I think debuted a little bit higher than 28. But that's who I hold out hope for from that bracket. And closer to the mark, Carlos Beltran has the third highest share of any returning candidate. And, you know, really, I think is on progress towards eventual election. I think we saw some of the resistance to him was maybe first-year resistance as a kind of a slap on the wrist for his participation in the Astro science dealing scandal. But he still has about 18 points to make up. So it's probably a 2 or 3 year away type thing. You know, and Andrew Jones is even closer than that, although he's now in his eighth year and with 61.6% of the vote last year. And he's got, you know, some issues. I mean, kind of a lopsided career, did everything in his teens and 20s, not much of a career in his 30s in terms of value. And unfortunately, the way his career ended, after his career ended in the majors in his mid-30s, he had a domestic violence charge against him, and that, I think, has maybe taken some of the fun out of this. But that hasn't entirely impeded his progress. And I think those are the ones that I look at from this. I don't think the PED guys are getting anywhere. They actually both lost about a point of support last year. We're talking A-Rod and Manny. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Andy Pettit lost support too, but he's much lower down. So, I think there's a lot of interest in the new guys, though.
Yeah, kind of the same same question on that. And for people who weren't paying attention over the last couple of days, Felix Hernandez, Carlos Gonzalez, Dustin Pedroia, Hanley Ramirez, Fernando Rodney, Ian Kinsler, Ben Zobrist, Troy Tulowitzki, Russell Martin, Brian McCann, Curtis Granderson, Adam Jones. Who do you feel like, same question, who maybe doesn't get in this year, maybe has that low number this year, but does see a path to Cooperstown?
Yeah, I don't know if any of those guys are going to see a path to Cooperstown, but I really want to talk about Russell Martin and Brian McCann because we've placed such a high value on pitch framing. We've learned about how valuable it is over the past decade and a half. And once you incorporate that into the statistics of McCann and Martin, you see that because they were better hitters than, say, Yadier Molina, not to press a point too hard here, their career values were on par with Molina. And I know we talk a lot about Molina as a potential Hall of Famer, and I think it really comes from, you know, the quantification, at least in part, has to do with his pitch framing. And so if you're going to tell me Yadier Molina is a Hall of Famer, I'm going to tell you that, yeah, you know, I think he is too, but I also think that Russell Martin and Brian McCann are probably worthy of that honor as well. And down the road, Buster Posey as well. And, I want to make sure that we understand this, the terms of the debate here when it comes to quantifying at least some of these catchers' contributions.
Yeah, no, I think it's because you're right. You're 100% right. And just about everybody listening to you in St. Louis is going to tell you that Yadier Molina absolutely is a Hall of Famer. And I agree with that. As I was having conversations about this the other day, I was talking about it more in terms of Brian McCann than Russell Martin, to be perfectly honest with you. But I can see a case for McCann. I think you make an interesting point on Martin as well on why these guys might have a path to Cooperstown.
Yeah, I mean, McCann won a World Series. He was on that Astros team that won in 2017. And, you know, I think we all, you're entitled to feel icky about that if you want to. I know I certainly do. But, he was a part of several playoff teams, always sought by good teams. Excellent hitter when he was healthy. Russell Martin was a transformative player at two of his stops. I mean, both the Pirates and Blue Jays had like epic playoff droughts before he got there. And he really did a lot to help those pitching staffs and, was a good hitter as well. But Martin was one of my favorite players to watch. I grew up a Dodgers fan, so I kind of default to watching the Dodgers when I have, no other pressing viewing appointments for baseball. And Martin, I just could never take my eyes off the guy. He was so mobile behind the plate, great at pitch blocking, excellent, as we later learned, at pitch framing. Saw him here in New York with the Yankees, saw what he did in Pittsburgh and Toronto, and that's all well documented. And he really was a transformative player. And I think that I'm looking forward to making the case. I don't even know if he's going to be on the next ballot. I hope I drum up enough support to keep him around. And there's other guys here. I mean, you know, I don't think Dustin Pedroia or Ian Kinsler or Felix Hernandez has a very strong shot of getting in while they're on the writer's ballot. But these guys had some great careers and certainly some fantastic moments. Pedroia was probably on a Hall of Fame path before his knee injury. Just didn't have the longevity that puts him in the camp of literally hundreds of other players. We can lament that they fell short, and I don't mean to keep making short jokes about Pedroia. I'm not exactly known for my ability to dunk a basketball myself here. So, Felix Hernandez, I think if he'd maybe won another Cy Young Award and stayed in better shape and got some longevity, he would definitely be in the conversation. I mean, you know, pitcher wins are not a great proxy for the Hall conversation anymore. He finished with 169 wins. If he'd gotten to 200, I think he'd be getting in almost regardless. He was so good at his peak. His peak just didn't last long enough. He just didn't hold together long enough. And I think part of that was overuse, and part of that was maybe lackluster conditioning. And I wish it had been different, but that's where we are.
Jay Jaffe, senior writer, Fangraphs, author of the Cooperstown Casebook. Jay, appreciate you taking time with us. I'm sure we'll talk to you again come around induction time and get your thoughts on what ends up happening.
Okay, sounds great. Thanks a lot.
Very good. That is Jay Jaffe. This is Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
We're back at on the Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. We are your home for Chiefs football. And this past weekend, well, the Chiefs, they lose for the first time this year as they match up against Buffalo and fall to the Bills in Buffalo by a 30-21 score. Feels like there's a pretty good chance these two teams could meet each other again in the postseason. Who knows? This might be an AFC Championship preview. You look at these two teams, you look at Baltimore, you look at Pittsburgh, really is the top teams in the AFC. There's some other teams in there. We're talking yesterday on the show about the Chargers and how they probably are going to be a fairly tough out. The Texans have looked good at times. I don't know. It still feels like maybe they're a step behind some of the other teams. But Bills, Chiefs, to many, feel like the top two teams in the AFC. And for the first time this year, the Chiefs do end up losing a game. They're trying to put together some more pieces and do some other things in order to, just be where they want to be. I mean, it's an offense that doesn't have all the pieces that they would like to have due to injury and some other things. But at the end of the day, I think most people feel pretty good about where Kansas City is going to be when all is said and done, but coming off a loss, as is the case each week. We get to hear from Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes, an exclusive interview he does with our sister station in Kansas City, 96.5 The Fan, as he talks with our colleague Carrington Harrison on an every week basis. As they opened up their conversation this week, they talked a little bit about the atmosphere and what it was like playing in Buffalo this past weekend.
Yeah, no, I mean, the crowd was definitely live out there. Obviously, I think the postseason was a little bit rowdier just because, I mean, it's a playoff football game. That's kind of how it is at every stadium. But they packed it out, man. It was a hostile environment for sure.
You're a history, you know, buff when it comes to the game and a story, and so to speak. What is it like to be in the middle of one of those kind of, you know, Colts and Patriots kind of rivalries where, you know, every time you guys play Buffalo, there's big stakes on board, and you know it's always going to be a tightly contested game going into the fourth quarter?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely cool. I mean, to be able to be in one of those games where it means a ton for seeding and everything like that as far as playoffs and stuff like that. But it's just cool going up against the best of the best. And we've been able to play Buffalo these last few years, and it's been a lot of fun. Obviously, we've won some and lost some.
You guys obviously never want to lose, but in some ways, is there a relief to kind of not have to talk about being undefeated every week? Like, that conversation was really going to ramp up if you guys had won this game, that now it's about the things that really matter, taking care of business in the AFC West, locking up a one seed, and putting you guys in the best position to go back to another Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, either way. I mean, I don't think it wasn't too much of a distraction or anything like that. I think we were just going about it one week at a time, and Obviously, there will be no questions at all because we have the loss. So I guess that could be a good thing. But at the same time, we have to focus on just getting better every week and trying to play our best football as the season goes on.
What was the tone around the team? You know, it's been a while since you guys have had a regular season loss, a loss period. You know, we're talking about almost going on a calendar year. For some of the guys on the team, this is the first time they've lost in their NFL career. What was kind of the tone for the team after the game? And how do you get those guys refocused as you head into another week and another week of practice?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you don't want to ever lose. So, I mean, guys weren't happy. But at the same time, I think guys understand that we have to be better. We have to execute the details better and play better football if we want to continue to stack up wins. And so it's about learning from this experience. I mean, obviously you don't want to lose any more games or anything like that, but you have to get better each and every week. And I think that's something that we can do following this loss.
Is that tone set by the coaches? Is that tone set by someone like you, Travis, Chris, guys that have kind of been through the ups and downs of a season? Obviously, you want to keep things in a perspective. You guys are still 9-1 and still in line to do all of those things. But that message this week, is that coming more from the players or is that coming more from the coaches?
I think it comes from everybody. I mean, that's what makes us such a great team is the coaches hold themselves accountable just like the players hold themselves accountable, and it kind of goes throughout the entire building. So we make sure that we just get to practice and we continue to work get better. But I mean the coaches emphasize it, we emphasize it as players, and then we go out there and execute whenever game day comes.
Right now we're talking to the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes. Patrick, let's talk about some things that happened in the game. There were some good and bad from Xavier Worthy, in my opinion. Let's talk about the drive that he had. That, to me, kind of felt like a, man, everything is starting to click moment. He finished with 4 catches for 61 yards. I thought Xavier Worthy played as well as he's played in about a couple of months or so.
Yeah, I think you see his confidence. He has a better understanding for the entire offense. And when he got in some man-type situations, he was winning and getting himself open. So, I mean, he's going to continue to get better and better. I mean, he's still a young kid. I mean, he's 21 years old and out here in the NFL getting a high volume of snaps, and he's making plays when he's getting opportunities. And so, like I said after the game, we have to continue to get him more and more involved in the offense throughout the entire game. But I thought he had a good game, all things considering.
Take us through the deep pass play that resulted in an incompletion. What we kind of talked about on the show was, sure, you could probably make a better throw in that scenario, put the ball in a better spot to help lead to a touchdown, but I also don't think that play should result in an incompletion either. Just kind of take us through that balance and how you guys can kind of help him get just some better field awareness, in my mind.
I think more than anything, it was kind of a play that you just have to learn from in general for me and for him. I mean, I think that wasn't necessarily the first read of the play, but I just how the safety reacted to the run fake, I knew that he was going to have some free room over there, and didn't fully see him, but try to put it out there for him to make a play. And wish I could have kind of set my feet, seen him, and just thrown a ball where he can lead him upfield, where he can score a touchdown. But I think just more and more reps that we get with that play, then those type throws will just continue to get better. And I know everybody hates it. It's kind of happened a couple of times this year, but at the same time, I feel like we're getting closer and closer, and you want to be able to hit those as the playoffs come around and into the rest of his career.
That's sort of how it feels to me. You know, you guys have kind of had one of those moments in each of the last game, you know, against Tampa Bay, against the Broncos, and against Buffalo. It does feel like as we get closer to the postseason, when you really want to get this thing right, it does feel like you guys are on track to getting that part of your game figured out.
Yeah, and I think it's shown over time, man. As you continue to get more and more reps, you get a feel for how the guy runs routes. You get a feel for how I want him to be in certain spots at certain timings. And I think he's getting more confident and being able to be himself. And I think whenever you're playing and not thinking is when you can play your best. And I think he's getting to that point.
Right now, we're talking to the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes. How good is it to get Juju Smith-Schuster back? It feels like just with Pacheco coming back to practice, Aminahu coming back to practice, Juju playing on Sunday against Buffalo, it feels like you guys are kind of coming out on the other side of some of the bad injury luck you guys had in the first half of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited to get those guys back, man. They worked their tail off, and so I'm excited to start getting some of those guys back on the field and letting them get back to being the special players that they are. And it was good to have Juju out there, man, someone I have a lot of confidence in. And I think as we continue to get more and more guys back, we'll continue to be better, especially offensively, and be able to go out there and execute at a higher level. And I'm just excited for what we have in store for these last few weeks going into the postseason.
I'm not sure if Pacheco's going to play at this game, but I do think he plays before the end of the month, either in this game against Carolina or against the Raiders. What is it going to be like to get him back, and how do you incorporate both backs into the system, as Kareem Hunt has also had a lot of success?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a special group, man. I mean, to be able to have Kareem and how he's playing and how he's running the ball, getting those extra yards, and then adding Pop, who we know is going to be excitement, and he's going to have energy, and he's going to make big plays happen and run tough. I think it's going to be hard for defenses to account for, and as well as you get the run game going, it opens up the pass game as well. And so I'm excited for it, man. I'm excited to get guys healthy, get them back in the swing of things, and let them go out there and be the special players that they are.
I know you've broken down the film. What do you think Buffalo did against Travis Kelce that gave them so much success?
All honesty, man, they did what they always do. I mean, they just played at a high intensity, a high level, and really focused in on trying to take away what you're good at, and they did a good job of that. I got to be better at getting him involved early and getting him some throws. Even on the first interception, I probably could just fit the ball into Trav and get the first down. And so, I mean, just stuff like that to get him going and get him involved in the offense. And, I mean, that's how some games roll, and other guys stepped up and made plays like Noah and Xavier, but getting those main guys going will help out the entire offense.
I was just going to ask you about Noah. He had two touchdowns in this game. He's really been a good piece for you guys. How have you seen his game grow over the years as you and him build rapport and continue to build on that chemistry?
Yeah, I think it's just me having confidence in him. As I watch film, it seems like every year when I do our scheme evaluation, I look at the film and I'm just like, man, if I just give Noah some of those opportunities, he's open a lot of the times during the game. And even in this last game, I threw a ball to Trav in the early second half where Noah kind of breaks open late. And that's not necessarily the first read, but it's one that I can alert and get to if I like the matchup. And so just continue to give him more and more opportunities to make plays. He's a guy that's going to do everything it takes to win the football game, and you want those guys on your team.
You guys' final touchdown drive, I think that was the best drive that you guys have had this season. You guys never faced a third down. You went down the field. As you watch the film, how is that something you guys can continue to replicate to get this offense firing on all cylinders?
Yeah, I think it's just having the urgency that we have on those final drives throughout the entire game. I mean, it seems like whenever we get down into a spot where we have to score a touchdown, we go out there and score a touchdown. And I think if we can have that urgency and that sense of I don't want to say pressure, but that sense of I got to do this right now every single drive, then we'll be a hard football team to beat. And it's about learning how to do that and then maintaining that throughout an entire football game.
How do you guys keep that urgency against this opponent? I mean, this game is sandwiched in between some pretty big games. You know, you go on the road against Buffalo. You got Black Friday coming up at home against a divisional opponent, a hated rival in the Raiders. How do you guys keep that intensity up on the road against in Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you turn on the tape and you see these, especially these last 2 weeks, this team's playing good football. I mean, I'm not going to say that they started off the year they wanted the way they wanted to, but they've gotten healthier. Their quarterback's playing good football, and their defense is playing really good these last few weeks. And so they had a bye week. They're going to be confident. We're going to have to go down there and play at their place, and they're going to give us everything they have. And so it's going to be a great game, man. And I'm not going to let the record fool me. I know this team has a lot of great football players, and it's going to take our best football to go out there and get a win.
Patrick, this is your first time playing against the Panthers on the road. Is this your first time in Charlotte? You know, that's not a Major League Baseball city. You know, maybe you had win with your pops before. This is your first time playing there. Are you even familiar with Charlotte?
I believe I've been there once. I can't remember exactly. I believe I've been there once on a golfing type trip at some point a while back. But I mean, I think it's a great city from everything I've heard, and they got a lot of young, talented players that are hungry, and it's gonna be a great football game.
I'll get you out of here with this. I would say that my two favorite college football players growing up were Reggie Bush and Cam Newton. Obviously, he's a great Panther. Who was that college football player for you growing up that you were just always going to be a huge fan of?
Cam's a good one. I think Cam's a good one just because I saw him play when he was at Blinn College against Tyler Junior College. They won like 70-7. So he's a good one that I always think about. Tim Tebow was a big one with just how good that Florida football team was. And then obviously the big one for me was Vince Young, just because being in Texas and playing USC in that Rose Bowl was a special moment for any Texas football fan.
I love Vince Young too, but you know he cost Reggie Bush that national championship. That moment always hurts me.
Yeah, I know, but that was good. That was good for me, you know, to see Vince go out there and dominate college football. And I mean, like, just like the hero type figure. I mean, the guy that could run, throw, do it all. Even before that was the thing.
That is Patrick Mahomes joining us on the show today, quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs. They look to get back on their winning path against Carolina this weekend. Pat, man, I'm looking forward to talking Thanksgiving with you next week, man. I appreciate you.
Yep, good seeing you. 2 weeks, and so they had a bye week. They're going to be confident. We're going to have to go down there and play at their place, and they're going to give us everything they have. And so it's going to be a great game, man. And I'm not going to let the record fool me. I know this team has a lot of great football players, and it's going to take our best football to go out there and get a win.
Patrick, this is your first time playing against the Panthers on the road. Is this your first time in Charlotte? You know, that's not a Major League Baseball city. You know, maybe you had win with your pops before. This is your first time playing there. Are you even familiar with Charlotte?
I believe I've been there once. I can't remember exactly. I believe I've been there once on a golfing type trip at some point a while back. But I mean, I think it's a great city from everything I've heard, and they got a lot of young, talented players that are hungry, and it's gonna be a great football game.
I'll get you out of here with this. I would say that my two favorite college football players growing up were Reggie Bush and Cam Newton. Obviously, he's a great Panther. Who was that college football player for you growing up that you were just always going to be a huge fan of?
Cam's a good one. I think Cam's a good one just because I saw him play when he was at Blinn College against Tyler Junior College. They won like 70-7. So he's a good one that I always think about. Tim Tebow was a big one with just how good that Florida football team was. And then obviously the big one for me was Vince Young, just because being in Texas and playing USC in that Rose Bowl was a special moment for any Texas football fan.
I love Vince Young too, but you know he cost Reggie Bush that national championship. That moment always hurts me.
Yeah, I know, but that was good. That was good for me, you know, to see Vince go out there and dominate college football. And I mean, like, just like the hero type figure. I mean, the guy that could run, throw, do it all. Even before that was the thing.
That is Patrick Mahomes joining us on the show today, quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs. They look to get back on their winning path against Carolina this weekend. Pat, man, I'm looking forward to talking Thanksgiving with you next week, man. I appreciate you.
Yep, good seeing you.
That is Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes talking with our guy Carrington Harrison in Kansas City on our sister station, 96.5 The Fan. Chiefs are getting ready for a matchup against the Panthers on the road. Man, if you're Carolina, this is not a game that you are looking forward to. You never like being that team facing off against a team, a really good team that has lost for the first time this year, and that's going to be the case. Let's see. I haven't even looked to see what the point spread for that game is. Right now, Kansas City is a 10.5-point favorite. It feels like the Chiefs could really put it on the Panthers this upcoming weekend. We'll have to wait and see how that's going to go. All right, that is it for the program today, but don't go anywhere because we've got the Gas House Gang coming your way after the 8 o'clock news. Today it is Tom Ackerman and Kevin Wheeler. They're going to be with you for Cardinals Talk and a few other things as well. That's coming up in just a little bit, so don't go anywhere. The Gas House Gang on the way next. My name is Matt Pauly, back with you tomorrow at 6 o'clock for another Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.